This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
They were demanding that that was prioritised for resurfacing. If we had done that, that would have cost £300,000. And if we had resurfaced that road, that would have left enough money in the kitty for about four other roads in Medway per year. It's cloud cuckoo land, the sort of social media arguments on this versus reality.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, this week where we've seen walkouts at County Hall, security increased at Swale, and we hear from councillors Alex Paterson and Andrew Lawrence about the various things that they disagree on in Medway. Joining me, of course, are Simon Finlay, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council.
Hello.
And Dan Essen, who covers the district and borough councils.
Hello.
And I'm Robert Buddy, and I cover Medway Council. So to begin with, Simon, this walkout at Kent County Council, tell us a bit about it.
Well, for a bit of political theatre, you couldn't wish for more, really, in the usually sort of fairly stuffy confines of the Chamber of County Hall. It was something of a dramatic exit. What preceded it was the Reform UK-led administration at Kent County Council had tried to put a motion declaring an illegal migration emergency into the agenda for last Thursday's full council meeting. The local opposition decided that they didn't much care for this and said that it possibly would conflict with the by-election that's being held in Cliftonville. So they got onto the Electoral Commission, and the Electoral Commission essentially agreed that there might be a conflict or might give one or other of the parties an advantage, and recommended that it shouldn't go ahead. The council's senior officers also thought that this would be a prudent move to maybe postpone it until another time. This was then challenged by Reform, who got a KC, a guy called James Gowdy, involved, who kind of backed the senior officer up by saying maybe it should be, but offered some kind of a compromise. The compromise was that if the chairman, Richard Palmer, said that everyone in the debate should avoid bringing any kind of party politics into it, then it could go ahead. When the motion came up for debate just after lunchtime, Anthony Hook, the opposition leader, made a speech saying that it was all a big stunt, and he led his members out and all the other opposition. All 31 of them walked out. It was quite a dramatic moment, actually.
And was it a big stunt for Reform, do you think?
Well, considering that KCC doesn't really have any power to do anything about illegal immigration, say small boats particularly, it's difficult to see what the point of it was, apart from to, you know, perhaps sort of engage in a wider debate. But that the wider debate also meant that where the Cliftonville by-election, where immigration is an issue on the doorstep, then the opposition parties felt that that wasn't on.
Do you think it would have achieved anything for the opposition politically to stage this walkout?
Well, it showed for once, actually, that they kind of really got their act together. We're able to outfox Reform. And these guys in Reform are not idiots by any stretch of the imagination, and are very effective campaigners, as has been seen over the last sort of couple of years. So has it been of any long-term benefit? Well, they certainly got some headlines out of it and stole the thunder from Reform, who probably thought that they were going to get some local headlines about the immigration debate, which didn't actually happen in the end.
So now from one contentious motion to the consequences of another. Dan, I think you've got the consequences of one in Swale, is that right?
Yeah, so way back in December, I didn't have the pleasure of being there that evening, but there was a motion proposed by a Liberal Democrat councillor, Favsham Hannah-Perkin, declaring Swale a district of sanctuary. It doesn't really commit them to any specific policy position, but what it would do would be to sort of symbolically declare that the council and the district is a safe place for immigrants, refugees, so on, and that they intend to be welcoming in that regard. This was obviously quite politically pointed. It came after a whole summer and a year where Faversham was pretty much at the centre of kind of anti-immigration street politics in Kent. There were lots of, they were part of the big old Operation Raise the Colours thing where people were hanging flags, particularly the St George's flag around the town, the sort of anti-immigration symbol, lots of quite rowdy anti-immigration protests. And she proposed this motion in December. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the sort of big names of the local anti-immigration protest movement turned up to the meeting, disrupted it pretty vigorously, lots of screaming and shouting of abuse in sort of packed public galleries, quite an edifying scene for everyone involved. The meeting had to be paused. People were told to leave. And in one of these pauses, basically loads of damage got done to the building. Bathroom flooded, door to one of the lifts broken. Swale House in Sittingbourne had to be closed the next day, cost I think more than £10,000. And since then, two children have been charged in relation to that vandalism. What happened since then? The council introduced some increased security measures, you know, a bit of extra CCTV, occasionally more security guards. But in particular this week, there was a discussion at the council around the, not decision-making one, but a debate around the possibility of much stricter measures like forcing people to show identification to attend meetings, having a ticketing system to sort of limit the amount of people attending in public, or even quite surprisingly putting a plastic screen between the public gallery and the council chamber.
And am I right in thinking that some people have basically said this is a bit of an overreaction to, I mean, obviously you're quite distressing scenes at the time, but a bit of an overreaction nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, the councillors I've spoken to say that, you know, they understand why people are concerned. You know, it's quite shocking and definitely not normal for councillors to be abused basically so vigorously during a meeting. You know, it's pretty normal to get a bit of lip and a bit of rowdiness at a planning committee meeting or whatever, a bit of booing or jeering. But the kind of stuff that happened in December was really quite out of the ordinary. But that's also part of why people are sceptical of it. Hannah Perkin, who proposed that motion, even she told me, you know, she was personally insulted quite openly by a lot of these campaigners, but she said, you know, these safety concerns shouldn't push us to do things so rash as, say, put a screen up between the public gallery and the council chamber. And Richard Palmer, who's a Reform councillor, he said much the same thing. He said, yeah, this place has been the centre of local politics in Swale for more than 50 years, and we've never had that kind of rowdiness before. Why should we react to it? In this way. Also, he said quite amusingly, it would make the place look like a Russian prison, because it's quite a common practice in Russian courts, or Russian court rather. It's quite a common practice there for the accused to be put in a glass cage during their trial. So, yeah, not just an aesthetic objection to it. He said, you know, it would create an unnecessary separation. But it's not, that proposal in particular hasn't been decided yet, but as far as I say, it wasn't popular by anyone I spoke to.
Is that the same Richard Palmer that is the chairman of Kent County Council and had to preside over the walkout last week?
The very same. Yeah. He keeps busy.
So, Rob, what's been happening with you then?
Well, so the big sort of element which we'll be discussing with our guests this week, Councillor Alex Patterson and Councillor Andrew Lawrence from Medway, is all about the School Street scheme, which has been sort of introduced in March 2024. So for those unfamiliar with what the scheme is, basically it's during set hours during the beginning and end of the school day, you're not allowed to drive down these roads outside of schools. And if you do, you get a £70 fine, which reduces to £35 if you pay it off within a certain amount of time. This has been very controversial in Medway. Some people are very, very much against it. And so this report was about the first year in the first seven schools. It's now expanded to 12 schools, and basically sort of evaluating the success of the scheme. So the key sort of metrics that they wanted to talk about were how many children are walking to school, active travel, the safety of the roads, and air pollution. And so on those counts, the number of children who said that they were now walking to school had increased. So it was 68% at the beginning or prior to the scheme being introduced, and it rose to 86% of children walking to school. Respondents to the survey said that streets did feel calmer, did feel safer. And there is some evidence, which the council admits is kind of, there are various factors, so they can't attribute it all to school streets, but the amount of air pollution in these areas has reduced in relation to...
So what sort of response was it to the consultation exercise?
Well, so that's the thing. In these seven schools, there are a total of around 2,400 children. Yeah. The responses, although those stats which I've just given you sound very good, only come from 156 responses to that consultation. So not a huge amount. The officers have made the point that, you know, if you're really outraged and think the school streets is rubbish, then you would probably respond to that consultation. Yeah. But equally, you know, it could be they just weren't aware of it, you know, and some of these, some of the findings of the individual schools, because it is broken down by schools, some of the evaluation of the scheme is based on like 3 responses for that school or 8 responses for a school. So it's kind of not, it can't really, I don't think, be claimed as representative of the actual experience of what the result of this scheme is.
Well, why was the response, any idea whether the response was so poor?
Well, I mean, council consultations generally, elections, of course, always get low turnouts and that's the thing. I mean, the overwhelming response from the responses was that the streets do seem calmer, and that is definitely the argument which I think Councillor Alex Paterson will be making in our interview with him, that basically you can't, a car that is not on the road, these school roads can't be a danger to children, and that's the main benefit of this scheme. But, you know, I think they would like there to be more evidence that it is such a success or that it is a success, but this is what they're working with, and it will receive criticism from the other side.
Do you think it's going to be a lively interview?
Based upon how I know the Councillor Lawrence and Councillor Paterson, if anybody has watched a Medway Council meeting with those two in it, there are always a few sparks between them. So yes, I anticipate it will be. So, Simon, this walkout and around this motion, what were Reform trying to achieve with this motion, really?
Well, the motion that prompted the walkout was a motion to declare an illegal migration emergency. This popped into the council agenda the previous Friday for the following Thursday. And it was then clearly picked up by the Daily Express, who ran it on its website. And then, of course, it got more national publicity and some local publicity as well. So this is clearly possibly a coordinated publicity exercise. And then it would get further publicity in the run-up to the council election and more publicity as a result of the election. Now, what obviously has hacked off the Conservatives who went to the Electoral Commission was basically to sort of say, look, we think that this will interfere with the Clintonville by-election and it shouldn't go ahead. We're not saying it should be stopped. We're just saying we should be postponed until the following month when we can have a proper debate. The Reform UK then sort of challenged that, and eventually it was allowed to go ahead with the caveat, as I suggested earlier, that as long as the chairman said nobody's allowed to stray into party politics when discussing this, and therefore it could go ahead at that point, the opposition sort of said, okay, well, we're not going to do that. And they all walked out, all 31 of them walked out. You know, the opposition are going to say it was a stunt. Mm. And to all intents and purposes, they've got a right to say that. But equally, you could say that Lyndon Kemp-Caron and her Reform UK councillors could turn around and sort of said the walkout was a stunt as well. Because what did it achieve? Nothing. But at the end of the day, the motion still went through 45-0 because there was nobody there to challenge it. But what the walkout did was get the headlines and not the debate.
But like stunts and symbolic motions, they're not quite voting for world peace, but this is basically the stock and trade of local councils. I think many of those who walked out probably sit on district councils, which I think every district council and the county council in 2019 declared a climate emergency, which is fundamentally a symbolic declaration of a state of emergency to express a political preference, which is surely what this motion was as well.
I thought the climate emergency were things you had to adapt your building in certain ways. There was certain...
Yeah, but there's legal responsibilities to do that anyway through...
But it was a commitment to it, whereas this was really one. Yeah, so I can see what you're saying, I think this was slightly different.
Do you think that it shows that maybe Reform is a bit concerned about this upcoming by-election and they need to sort of generate some positive news stories for themselves?
Look, everybody I speak to, and I've been speaking to a lot of people, and I've been down there 3 times myself and spent a bit of time down there, and nobody seems to be able to call it. You know, if I had a tenner of your money, I would put it on Reform because they're in the incumbent party. They're still quite very strong down there, very strong core vote. The Tories fancy it, the Greens really fancy it, and the Labour Party fancies it as well. I mean, most people think that the Labour vote will not hold up, and nor will the Tory vote, and a lot of people are prepared to lend their vote to the Greens on this occasion just to keep Reform out. So there's a threat in that direction, but it will involve a bit of tactical voting.
I was going to ask Simon, you've been there quite a bit since the election was called. I've been surprised to see that, you know, you hobnobbing it with the great and the good of national politics. Caroline Lucas came down. Kevin Badenoch came down.
Emily Thornberry.
Caroline Lucas came down. Emily Thornberry came down. Robert Jembrick did. Why are so many national politicians interested in this by-election in a small ward in Thanet, where basically a few thousand people will be voting maximum?
To be honest, Dan, I mean, it feels more like a parliamentary by-election. We are literally dozens and dozens of activists coming out.
Being bussed in from elsewhere as well, you think?
Well, they come from all over the country. I wouldn't say from outside Kent. These are mostly local activists. The Green Party told me the other day that when they were having an envelope stuffing exercise in a cafe, there were 70 volunteers turned up. So I think that that's where the threat appears to be coming from for reform. But I think that when you get people like Caroline Lucas and Dame Emily Thornberry, clearly they're taking it quite seriously. Are reform worried? Well, they didn't win the Hextable by-election, which they hoped to in Sevenoaks, and that was on a high turnout. And this is where the thing will actually hinge on. If it's a low turnout, it'll favour reform. If it's a high turnout, reform will be worried. Most people seem to think that the money is still on reform, but they don't know enough about the Green Party operation locally to make any kind of value judgment at this point.
And so in terms of the motion that was there, and do you think that in the end, with the walkout in the end, benefited reform, or did the walkout kind of take the sting out of it?
I think it took the sting out of it. Whether it translates, you know, into any votes for the Green Party or the Labour Party or the Liberal Democrats down on the patch, who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But as I say, I think a high turnout will probably favour the opposition group, because that would suggest, as it did in Hextable, that there was a big concerted effort to get the vote out in order to prevent reform from winning. And if that happens there, then it could be trouble. It'll be, you know, it doesn't affect the numbers in County Hall, because the chap who had the seat there, who's since been sent to prison, you know, was already kicked out of the party. He was no longer part of the numbers. But symbolically, you know, reform have already lost 10 of their councillors, 10 of their 57 councillors since they were elected last May. And to lose an election at that point, particularly in the run-up to the May elections in other parts of the country, is just not a very good look, and something they would probably prefer to avoid.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
This week we're talking Medway, and joining me are Councillor Alex Patterson, Portfolio Holder for Community Safety, Highways and Enforcement for the Labour Administration, and Councillor Andrew Lawrence, the Conservatives' Shadow Cabinet Member for Regeneration, Community and Housing. Welcome to you both. So, Councillor Patterson, let's start with you. Councils, and particularly Medway councils, always talk about difficult choices that they have to make when setting their budget, and we're coming to the end of this financial year and moving to the next one. Medway's next year's budget has £10.1 million worth of exceptional financial support, that's borrowing from the government, to cover day-to-day costs. That's a total of £60 million since this process began in 2024. Is Medway in a stable financial place at this point, or are we basically just sort of limping on until hopefully local government reorganisation changes the map of Kent?
I think that we are certainly on a journey which began in May 2023 when we inherited finances which were in a parlous state, not our words, but the words of SIPFA, the sectoral experts who we brought in. So we are certainly not marking our own homework on this. We've brought in the experts who have helped us set out a clear roadmap to financial stability. We're you know, a few years down that journey, and certainly the intention is that this is the final year of exceptional financial support. And I think that we have made, you say, difficult decisions. I don't think, in terms of protecting services that matter to the people of Medway, I don't think that's a difficult decision to make. The mechanics of how you achieve that can be tricky, but that's certainly what we were elected to do.
I mean, you mentioned there sort of a thing that your leader, Vince Maple, has always said along these past few years is precisely that of balancing the budget is a measure of either cutting services or raising revenue. And he says he doesn't want to cut services, so in return you have to raise revenue. And particularly parking charges have gone up again this year. Is there a point, is there a risk that those charges, you know, for parking, leisure centres and these sorts of things, eventually start to have a sort of a negative effect and push people away and you start to lose revenue in that sense?
I suppose anything which you charge for, there's a market rate, and if you push the limits too far, then you will encounter problems. What I would say is that our parking rates still remain competitive compared to quite a number of councils elsewhere in Kent. And certainly there are car parks which you will go through the barrier and continue to drive round on a loop until you find a space because they are packed full. So I think that tells its own story. It's not a story in every car park, but those are the choices that I think are responsible to make, because ultimately, you know, there are services being funded by councils which nobody would choose to use if they had any choice in the matter. Adult social care, special educational needs children, all of those things that are funded by what we fund as a community. Now, if we have to find extra money from somewhere, I think that's a legitimate way to maximise income from an asset which is owned by every single one of us. It would be remiss of me as portfolio holder holding those assets on behalf of residents not to maximise potential income from them.
Councillor Lawrence, you've been quite critical of the way that Medway has used exceptional financial support. Could you just sort of explain why that is?
Well, it's no longer exceptional. It's every year. I mean, Medway Labour have become hooked on borrowing to balance their budget. When Medway Labour took over Medway, dire day for the people of Medway, there was £16 million worth of reserves. There's now £10 million of reserves, and we have £62 million worth of debt. The embarrassment is in the current year, which has still not ended, they've had to go back and ask for another £10 million because they got their sum so wrong at the start of the year. So that's £10 million on top of £14 million.
What I would say is, in terms of an addiction, in terms of any addiction here, having been a councillor for 8 years and in opposition for the majority of that time, what the previous administration had an addiction to was plundering reserves to patch short-term problems. They essentially sold the family silver because they weren't prepared to make any of those difficult decisions which have just been mentioned. The grip that was completely lacking at that time, and so we were left both with plundered reserves and a £17 million deficit in the revenue budget.
Well, there wasn't a £17 million deficit because you had £16 million of reserves.
The solution for Conservatives is you can balance it, provided that you can sell the family silver. You did that for 20 years. It was a disaster. CIPFA confirmed that position had left Medway in a perilous state. It's not something to be proud of.
Maybe Councillor Patterson, let me get a word in edgeways. It always shows someone on the back foot when they constantly interrupt. It's a real shame. So selling the family silver, any asset that's in excess of what you need needs to be disposed of because it can be used better. Medway Labour have got a massive list of disposals that they're currently going through because they've overborrowed and we're paying enormous sums in interest. £25 million is the interest charge for next year. Now, that £25 million could be used to provide services. So Gillingham Business Park has gone. Raynham Shopping Centre's gone. There are loads. So let's not talk about selling the family silver, Councillor Patterson. You are engaged. I'm happy to sell assets that we no longer need or we no longer have a use for. Importantly, we can't keep assets that we can't maintain. Now, Medway Labour are spending £20 million doing up Gun Wharf because they want that to be the headquarters building for the new North Kent Authority. Now, you know, is that the right amount to be spent? Are we overspending? They want to build a new care home, which if I get the numbers right, and I'm sure Councillor Patterson will put me right on this, by the time we've paid back the debt of £44 million plus the interest, that care home's going to cost over £150 million. So I do think we have to sit back and take a look at how we're providing services here in Medway. The fact is, and I hope Councillor Patterson can agree with me on this, the system for local government finance is totally broken. It was a system designed before local authorities had to deal with things like social care and the explosion of SEN that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years. And, you know, I do think sensible, intelligent politicians could sit down, especially at the local level, because we're the ones who are actually having to deal with this. You know, and I'd invite Councillor Paterson to come sit down with me and let's talk about local government finance and how we can improve it so that actually we can provide the services that people in Medway want. But also we can actually have elections where people are elected based on a manifesto and spending commitments and tax commitments as well. Open invitation to Alex if he wants to come and join me.
You mentioned the care home there, and that's something I'd like to touch on a little bit later. But, you know, your criticism of the way Labour has built this budget with the EFS, the question that people want to know is, well, what would you do differently then? Because that 10 million gap, how would you fill that?
Yeah, look, that is an absolutely great challenge. And, you know, in the budget for last year, we did come up with a much more extensive budget than the one we came up with this year. And actually, Councillor Paterson was one of those that totally laughed that budget off.
Well, that budget was laughable. I mean, what it had was a list of 38 redundancies, a list of 38 staff you would get rid of. You wouldn't specify who they were, why you were getting rid of them, or on what factual basis. It was finger-in-the-air stuff, back-of-the-fag-packet nonsense.
Based on the political prejudices. The CFO actually agreed that budget.
Absolutely, he does,
because you can't put it forward unless you get him to agree.
I think you're playing with words there in terms of agree. Did technically those numbers add up? Yeah, but without any dealing with the consequences, that's not the Chief Finance Officer's role in that situation. Yeah. So I know you're getting back to reading your script,
Andrew, but it's my talking point.
Oh, talking points, okay. But, you know, actually, we know that the budget that was put forward by the Conservatives last year was literally laughable.
Yeah. But let's talk about the one this year, because is it not the case? I mean, you have to accept that, as you say, the amendment that you put forward, it took out the care home and it made some changes to the parking charges, but it did not address that £10 million of EFS.
No.
So if the Conservatives were in charge, it is likely that you would be in exactly the same position, but it's just the fact that you're in opposition, you can make the argument that this is wrong.
I don't underestimate the challenge that the Labour group have had in trying to provide the statutory services they have to provide with the money that the government provides. This is why I say local government finance is broken. So I'm not going to sit here and say this is an easy job. There is a wand that you can wave and the £62 million disappears. Let's be honest here. That £62 million that Labour have borrowed, we're going to be paying back for 20 years. Okay. There's not a single asset attached to that £62 million worth of borrowing. It is revenue borrowing. So the next incoming administration will have to deal with the £25 million a year interest charge and the £62 million worth of debt that the Medway Labour built up.
This is what we always get from Conservative politicians. They'd like to be reductive on these things because they don't have any respect for the voter and they think they're daft enough to believe that a council budget that is, you know, around in excess of half a billion pounds a year is like a household budget and that the borrowing can be construed in the same terms. So in terms of scale of borrowing, yes, we are investing to save going forward, and those are programmes which the Conservatives have opposed at every opportunity. All of those opportunities to save down the line,
which opportunities?
Cost,
give me an example of an opportunity.
Let's reduce it back down to the point you're making. Uh-huh. So, on a household budget level, I can't afford in a single financial year to buy a house, but I take out a mortgage over 25 years based on my income, based on my ability to repay. That's a prudent thing for me to do because the alternative, if I'm in the position to do that, is to pay market rent for all of those 25 years. So, if we want to be reductive about it, that's what the council's doing. With a turnover,
right? Let's just challenge Alex's
pounds.
Reductive point. He just used the example of having a mortgage to buy a house, but actually, what Medway Council have done is they've got a mortgage debt to pay for the shopping and the electricity and the rates and the water rates because there's no asset. It's not like we're buying assets.
Well, I suppose the difference is that without that EFS, Medway would have to declare effective bankruptcy.
Yeah, well,
and that would bring in government inspectors and they would cut services to the bone, which is not what residents want.
There were actually other options that could have been done. But as I say, I'm not going to stand here despite what Councillor Paterson say, and say there is an easy solution, right? So, but do you at this point continue to borrow? So I think Medway Labour have borrowed £200 million since they've come to power. Some of that money, absolutely, we would support. For example, the £40 million to buy accommodation to alleviate temporary housing expenses. Absolutely. In actual fact, that was a policy that Councillor Howard Doe proposed before Medway Labour came in.
Didn't do it.
At the end of the day, the problem we've got is that borrowing costs remain very high. The council's in a position where it has a lot of short-term borrowing at 5%. And as the Labour government are learning very hard that events outside your control will have an impact on your ability to service debt.
Now, one of the suggestions that both the Conservatives and the Reform group, to their credit as well, suggested was the cancellation of the care home project, which you briefly mentioned there. Now, adult social care is one of the biggest costs to the council. It is where a huge chunk of its funds go. You oppose this as sort of you're borrowing today. It's not going to get built before Medway Council is abolished. Yeah. These were the sort of arguments. But Medway is short of care home spaces. It needs these. So why get rid of this asset that could be used in the future?
Because it's just too expensive. We don't have the money to borrow £44 million, pay back the debt interest over that period of time, and then run the care home. Remember that? You know, there is a crisis in Alzheimer's care, particularly in that really high needs care. But Medway Labour are borrowing money that that Medway residents won't be paying back, because it will become the burden of the North Kent Authority when it gets created, if it gets created, of course. So for us, yes, we accept David Wildey, Councillor Wildey, Councillor Brake have got lots of experience in dealing with these issues. But even they said this is not the right time to be borrowing. You could have approached it in a different way. The land is one of the most expensive elements of that. So it's land that the council owned. We could have invited in an external care provider, give them the land and ask them to build that facility and put a certain amount of warranties on the use of that land. But even in that care home, if I've got it right, that care home will need private paying residents to make it work. And we haven't seen the full plan around the feasibility for that care home. The information I have that a care home of less than 120 residents does not make any financial sense. We will see when the feasibility study is finished before they start building.
So we'll move on now to the School Street scheme, which I think is equally sort of going to be contentious in the studio. It is controversial. I think we can all accept that. Some people support it. Some people really do not. We've had evidence back this week about sort of the extent of how it has worked for the first seven school streets, which were introduced in March 2024. Councillor Paterson, could you just talk us through what has been found and in your mind, is the school street scheme a success?
So I suppose the starting point is the basis on which school streets have proceeded as a policy. And there's a pretty simple premise at the heart, which is that when you have fewer vehicle movements on streets outside schools, that makes the environment inherently safer and more pleasant for people, pedestrians, children walking to and from school. As a very time-limited intervention, school streets, which operate for 10 hours a week at those locations that we've introduced them, inherently removes a significant part of those vehicle movements. So judged entirely on that basis, they are the most sort of immediate impact policy I think I've ever been involved in. What this latest monitoring report gives us is additional information on their wider impact.
I mean, in this report, there were surveys done of parents of children at these school streets, and it did say that the number of children walking to school, which is kind of one of the main purposes to get more children walking to school, it went from 68% to 86%, which is a good increase. However, this survey, I should also say that parents also found the streets, as you say, were calmer, safer. They felt that the air was fresher and cleaner. However, these surveys were only 156 respondents. Now, there are around sort of 2,000 2,200, I think.
2,400.
2,400 children at these schools that have been affected. That's quite a narrow sample size, isn't it?
I think you would always want there to be as big a response to a survey. unless we're intending making it compulsory, that's certainly not something that I think is feasible. We've gathered that information. What I can say is that the journeys to and from school have been improved for 2,400 children across all of those schools. So actually, this is a policy which benefits anyone, whether they make part of their journey by car, by taxi, by public transport, or entirely on foot. What we have done has improved the last part or the first part of that journey for everybody, for the many, not the few.
Councillor Lawrence, I'm guessing
you're
sceptical.
Robert, I mean, I'm staggered. I mean, the Labour Party have become the absolute experts at gaslighting the electorate on this. I just want to say right from the top, I do believe there are some schools that will benefit from School Street. Schools in our very narrow streets, in our Medway Core, for example, where I think a scheme to calm the traffic is absolutely right. At the council meeting in January, we asked for a review of the School Street scheme, which Councillor Paterson, maybe he was scared to do the review.
To be fair to him, he did say that this report was coming down the track, and so he would get
so let's activated. Let's just look at this report. So you quite rightly point out 156 responses. At one school, St Thomas More, there was only three responses. And, Councillor Paterson is basing the success of this on what is...
Well, I think that's what makes for an entertaining podcast, Councillor Lawrence.
No, it may well do, but it just makes you rude.
But actually, no. you're raising a point about Thomas More and three responses, and I think that really does exemplify the issue with a small response rate, because the three responses were completely out of kilter with other schools because they were three negative responses. It does suggest that there's an overrepresentation of people who perhaps have strong feelings on these things. Okay.
Maybe,
and actually, the 2,400 pupils at all of those schools who are benefiting, most of them have better things to do with their time.
For God's sake. I mean, I'll just, Councillor Paterson, you're incredible. Let's just look at some facts, right? The facts. In the year before School Street...
Your script.
Yeah, because I've actually done some research, Councillor Paterson. You've got a whole set of council officers behind you doing this work for you.
I've not got anyone in the studio with me.
That's
okay. Keep reading, Councillor Lawrence.
I'm sure the
listeners are very interested in the script.
To the point, please, rather than...
So in the year before School Street, there was only two minor collisions involving children during school time outside the schools that were affected by School Street. The real issue for road safety in young people is actually the age group 11 to 16. And none of the School Street schemes address that. And that is the key here. If you want to bring in a policy that looks after children, then go for the bit that where children are most affected, and that is secondary school children, not primary school.
That's a great idea, Councillor Lawrence. I'm all for that.
But let me just point out the reason why you've gone for primary schools, and this gets to the heart of the School Street issue, is far more primary school parents drop their children off. And this was absolutely the cash cow attack on hard-working people trying to get their kids to school while they then go on to work.
Let's also look at
the air quality issue. In October, there was a cabinet report that showed that air quality in Medway had improved dramatically to the point that some of the air quality schemes felt it was right to end them because there was no longer an air quality issue. So, just more energy efficient vehicles, increase in EVs, hybrids, had actually
specific
improved
interventions, had, an action plan.
Had actually an improved plan. Had actually improved the air quality in Medway far beyond School Street. And even in the report, there are contradictory points about air quality. The report acknowledges that School Street is probably not responsible for the improvement in air quality. So,
Let's ask you a really simple question here, Councillor Lawrence, because I've made no grand claims
about school streets being responsible for the removal of air quality management areas. I've made no such grand claim. Do you think a car which is there produces more pollution than a car which isn't there? Simple question, yes or no.
Okay, I'm not going to give you the binary answer.
No, of course you're not.
Because actually, those cars are no longer in the school. They're parked in roads adjacent to the school. So residents who live outside the school...
Making shorter journeys away from the school gate, encouraging modal shift, encouraging active travel, right. All part of council policy.
Yeah, I think the viewers and the listeners of this podcast will hear Councillor Paterson constantly interrupting because he is... struggling
to
justify.
I'm just trying to make it interesting, Councillor Lawrence, rather than you reading a script.
At the end of the day, you know, the £1.5 million that's been robbed from our residents.
Councillor Paterson
has become a modern-day Dick Turpin, committing highway robbery on the hard-working residents of Medway. And I'm sure the people in Rochester, West and Ballster will have their opportunity at the next election to express their opinion. Because Councillor Paterson failed to turn up to a public meeting in Rochester. Maybe he was scared of the 100 people who really are against the
Councillor
next scheme.
Lawrence, we can absolutely avail... listeners, if they can be interested in exactly why I wasn't able to be at that meeting, this is a bit like organising an Oscars party and saying Tom Hanks is going to be there, not telling Tom Hanks he's expected to be here beforehand, then saying to people, isn't it terrible that Tom Hanks didn't turn up to the thing he wasn't invited to before we arranged it? A Conservative politician arranged a meeting during a statutory consultation period in either full knowledge of the fact that it would be improper for me to attend or in utter ignorance of that fact. Either way isn't a good look for him.
Well,
Councillor Paterson was going to raise a point which I was also going to raise, and he said it many times, so you'll probably recognise it from many times he said it, but these fines that are issued to people who drive down these school streets. Yep. They are breaking the rules. Is it not fair that they receive a penalty?
The rules and the laws of the land are there to be obeyed. Okay. What I'm questioning is the imposition of the restrictions to start with. In my ward, and I've written to Councillor Paterson, I actually asked Councillor Paterson to have a conversation with me for 20 minutes about a particular issue, but he refused.
Lawrence hasn't grasped. He's not the portfolio holder. I don't discuss Labour Party policy with a far-right politician.
Actually, it would be a far-right politician. You need to take that back. I'm not a far-right politician. You need to withdraw that comment now.
Where would you position yourself on the political spectrum?
You need to withdraw that comment now. Because
this
I'm
is
not
someone
a far
from
right
your from your deleted social media accounts. You used to identify yourself exactly in those terms. Right. You listed your heroes. So no, I think we know what you're all about, right. Councillor Lawrence.
Are you going to withdraw that comment? Yeah. Right. So Councillor Paterson actually blocked me on social media because he doesn't like the debate.
Well, Councillor Lawrence had to delete his social media accounts because of the disgusting content.
Can we come back to the point of
Okay. So just remind me of the point, Robert.
So. These people who are being fined.
Yeah. So my point is about the imposition of the scheme to start with. There was no factual evidence around pollution or incidents involving children during school time that justified the imposition of those schemes to start with. So the thing about this is, it's call it the laws of unintended consequences, or actually the real reason School Street was brought in, which was raise money, because the Medway Labour Group had actually, you know, popped the budget. They needed as much revenue as they could, they can get
false.
In order to...
Well, 100% false, evidence, factually incorrect.
Okay, so there's been no improvement in road safety, there's been no improvement in air quality.
I think, Rob, it really is, this does get to the heart of the issue, though, because Councillor Lawrence, in the absence of critical faculties, relies on data. Data. His decisions are based around data. But when you talk about prior data to justify the introduction of a school street, what Councillor Lawrence is actually saying, not in not so many words, is he wants to see child casualties. He wants to see child deaths before we justify this. Well, that's the logical conclusion. No. That is the logical conclusion of demanding statistical evidence of that nature, accident data, to justify the introduction. Yeah. I don't want there to be any accidents. And actually, residents contact me frustrated at the lack of introduction of safety measures on streets where the accident data doesn't justify it. We have the opportunity to get ahead of the problem here, and that's what we've done.
Unfortunately, you can see Councillor Paterson's background from a red top newspaper where it's all, you know, just... innuendo and innuendo.
The fact is, a newspaper that was on the side of the people, in favour of the many, not the few.
Good public policy is based on data, not the feelings of a few
people. How many casualties would you like, Councillor Lawrence? How many broken limbs? How many deaths? Councillor Lawrence, to make his point.
Honestly, the fact is, there were two incidents outside those seven schools in the year previous. So we have fined, how many people did you fine? Have you fined 7,000 people? You've raised £1.5 million in fines. Don't tell me this is not a revenue-raising scheme, Councillor Paterson.
Those people have contravened the rules. They've brought it. It's entirely optional. I know that it's really on brand for you to stand up for selfish drivers who are putting children at risk. That's really on brand for you. I'm going to stand up for the overwhelming majority of people who already do the right thing, always did the right thing. And you know, I'm speaking not as someone who's treating this as a hypothetical. For over a decade, I walked my two children to and from school. I endured all of the issues which have been highlighted in this report and by the monitoring report and by the, you know, studies up and down the country about the impact of vehicles on people making those journeys. We did not feel safe. The school that we used to walk to now has a school street, and it's transformational.
Time is running on, so my final question on school streets is to you, Councillor Paterson. We're talking about these fines and people being issued. I just want to sort of compare it with the Red Route scheme, which is also a traffic management scheme. With that one, we've seen the number of fines being issued for Red Routes has steadily declined, whereas for school streets, an FOI that we submitted showed that there's actually been an increase in the number of school streets fines issued. So the report goes from March 24 to February 25. There are more from March 25 to December 25 than there were in the start. So why is it, do you think, that people, that we're not seeing a decline? Or yeah, why is that?
I suppose any new scheme has a settling in period. There's no question that people have to get used to that. And that's something that we built into these schemes with a 6-month grace period. So anyone on a first offence within the first 6 months of operation received a letter, not a PCN. So there's definitely, you know, plenty of examples of people taking that lesson, learning it, and not doing it again.
Well, clearly not, because the number of fines is going up, Councillor Paterson.
It's okay to interrupt now, Councillor Lawrence. Yeah. That's fine, I don't mind, that's debate. But anyway, you know, what we have is a period where we are bringing in multiple schemes, so we have overlap between Tranche 1 and Tranche 2. We have six-month grace periods there. And I think that, you know, any lessons that can be learned in terms of public awareness of this scheme, I'm really keen to learn them, because contrary to the conspiracy theories that we've heard from Councillor Lawrence, it's not a trap. I don't want people to make that mistake. I don't want people to drive on school streets. I want them to obey the rules, play by the rules, and you don't get a fine.
Actually, I think the independent reviewer of traffic fines actually did describe the burnt oak scheme as a trap.
Well, I think it's important to just point out that in terms of the data around the independent cases that have gone to the independent tribunal, 0.8% of fines have been overturned using that method. So if you want to use an outlier...
That's only because the number of people who've applied is very low.
If you want to use an outlier as proof, that doesn't seem to back up your obsession with empirical data that you've hitherto relied on.
Okay, we'll move on from school streets now. I think we've covered that quite well. Potholes, they're a big topic. You know, look at any Facebook group across, you know, Medway, across Kent. They're the most visible, they're complained about. Why is it, Councillor Paterson, that some residents feel that the council isn't acting in any way in this? What is, you know, they see these potholes sitting there for months. Why do people feel that way?
I would challenge that. I don't think potholes sit there for months. I think that where you have a pothole which meets the criteria for intervention, it's dealt with pretty promptly, and then if necessary with a temporary repair, and then followed up with a permanent repair. What people see is generally what they see on the routes that they use. So it wouldn't matter if I resurfaced 80% of the roads in Medway if a resident only used the other 20%. And that's part of the issue in terms of relying on that as data. That's not how the council does this. We actually do have really impressive data which we're gathering using cameras mounted in vehicles to monitor...
Is that real data?
Clearly, what do you mean? Just
I'm not following your point, but there we go. So we've got cameras mounted on vehicles which are gathering real-time data on the deterioration of potholes or of road surfaces and identifying those areas which are most urgently in need of intervention. We don't have the money to do everything everywhere all at once. So the only prudent way to do this is to target the areas most in need.
So I think people will understand that, but they will look, as you say, people drive on the roads they drive on, they notice the potholes that they face. And they will think, well, these are dreadful. What is the criteria for sort of a significant repair? And also, I mean, Chatham Hill was recently resurfaced and you produced a video which showed the cost of it. So can you just talk about the scale of the problem compared to how much you have in terms of funds to fix it?
Yeah, so looking ahead to this year's budget, I've been given a draft programme of resurfacing work, which is to use up a budget of around £1.2 million. Now, depending on the size and scale of the intervention, we are talking six-figure sums for each of those projects. You know, a few weeks ago, we had some reform politicians making a song and dance about a street in Strood, which they claimed was the worst road in Kent. I can tell them again, the data tells us it wasn't even in the top 20. It was a priority two road with a concrete undersurface which was not degraded. It had a tarmac layer on the top, which looked horrible, but actually wasn't fundamentally a problem. So they were demanding that was prioritised for resurfacing. If we had done that, that would have cost £300,000. And if we had resurfaced that road, that would have left enough money in the kitty for about four other roads in Medway per year. It's cloud cuckoo land, the sort of social media arguments on this versus reality.
Councillor Lawrence, I mean, that's a fair point. There's just simply not enough money.
Yeah, I know, but when you're spending £25 million surfacing your debt that you've built up, then of course there's not going to be enough money for things that the vast majority of us want to use. Now, I want to give the council some praise here. I've campaigned hard for a number of roads in my ward, and I actually felt up until Christmas the road surfaces were gradually improving. Absolutely. In Hempstead and Wigmore, around Hempstead Valley Shopping Centre, Hempstead Road, there have been some really great work. I think residents are frustrated when the council do like 30 metres, leave 30 metres and then do another 30 metres. Why didn't they just do the whole lot in the same time? But that's operational. I think Councillor Maston does make an interesting point that, you know, you do have to have some form of priority system. Okay, absolutely, you do have to have some form of priority system. And, you know, that's the only way to go. I think for all members, and I think even for the reform members, they're going to be campaigning in the areas where they represent.
It wasn't even their ward. Okay, it just happened to be somewhere that one of their activists lived, which shows you that the priorities are personal rather than for the greater good.
But, you know, I think you would campaign hard to get work done in your ward as I would.
I think it's really important to make this point because I just picked Councillor Lawrence up about campaigning hard on resurfacing for a particular road. That isn't how this is done.
Nope.
So road prioritisation does not happen on my whim, on my say-so as an elected member. I think this is something that elected members should keep well out of the decision-making process on. And so the prioritisation is based on professional assessments, the inspections, the data that we're gathering from the cameras in the front of bid lorries, and actually making sure that we are doing it where it's needed, not where those who shout loudest live.
I think, look, at the end of the day, members will lobby for residents in their ward, for things that affect their residents. We don't make the decisions, officers make the decisions. So you make a valid point, that's the thing, but that's what actually happens in reality. I think, once again, this just shines a huge light on the failure of local government finance. You know, the fact is a big chunk of the money to repair the roads comes from central government. So if central government don't give you the money, you can't just go raise council tax to repair the roads. It's just, you just can't do it. I think the other thing to note is that actually the Labour government did throw a lot of money in the first year into repairing potholes. I think it was a national manifesto pledge to improve the road surface. But now that money's been spent, and, you know, poor old Medway Council ended up as amber for that effort, you know, which is really disappointing, I suppose. But, you know, the officers are trying hard with a limited set of money, and there is a lot of work to be done.
We're coming to the end of our time now, so I'm going to zoom out to sort of national issues. Polls still favour reform, but not as much as they have done previously. Is the sheen of reform coming off? And do you think that sort of the performance of reform at Kent County Council, for example, being their flagship council, has contributed to that, Councillor Paterson?
I mean, you talk about a sheen coming off reform. I don't know that they ever really had much of a sheen. It's some pretty ugly politics, and particularly what we've seen down at County Hall with some of the behaviour, whether it's reform councillors being jailed for serious offences, or standing alongside people carrying neo-Nazi banners. So, you know, there's not much of a polish there. I think this has always been a protest vote, and in a sense, not a particularly literate protest vote. It's a protest vote based in a sort of howl of anger at why isn't everything being sorted out. And I can understand that. People are impatient for change, and they're always more impatient with a Labour government, because ultimately all the great things I would argue that have happened post-war in this country have been as the direct result either of a Labour government or of pressure from the Labour Party. Social change, Equality Act, Equal Pay Act, the NHS, all of those things would have happened in spite of Conservative with a small C voices, and that includes people like Reform, who now want to pretend that they are above politics, but we all know that essentially they are increasingly a Conservative tribute act.
Councillor Lawrence, are Reform a blip? Are they on their way out? Or?
No. Look, Robert, I think Reform are the party of protest for both Labour and Conservative voters. I mean, Labour are facing an absolute electoral
wipeout. That's not what the data suggests.
They're facing an absolute electoral wipeout, even bigger than the one we suffered. So, look, I think we have to reflect on the fact that the voters have had enough at the moment, have had enough of the Labour Party, and they've had enough of the Conservative Party. The Greens are doing very well on the left. Reform are doing well on the centre, well, maybe the far right. And we have to, the Conservative Party has to come up with a set of coherent policies, promises that we can deliver on, that will attract back the Conservatives that have drifted off to Reform. I think Reform, they have all sorts of issues with their organisation here in Kent. You know, they are a very centrist party. Conservatives, by our very nature and philosophy, we believe in localism, and we believe in locally independent associations to select our members who stand for us in councils. Reform are very different. So if you're on the wrong side of Nigel, Kim Caron, you're just not going to get selected. And I think poor Councillor Lammas is finding that a really tough a tough call. But we can take the arrogant view, and we can label them as far right and all the things.
I don't know. I'd say standing next to a neo-Nazi flag's pretty far right.
If I was Councillor Paterson, given the issues with Peter Mandelson at the moment, I'd be very careful about.
So was he standing
stones.
Next to a neo-Nazi
okay.
flag?
Well, no, I'm not sure standing next to a paedophile.
I'm not really sure where you're going with that.
Well, I just told you where I'm going.
And what were the consequences for him?
Well,
they were pretty significant.
Well,
what were the consequences for Reform councillors who did that?
Well, I'm sure
squat diddly.
I'm sure those consequences will come, because if they've broken any laws, they will be prosecuted. So I really do think, be careful about throwing stones, genuinely.
Next to a neo-Nazi flag's pretty bad. I would hope you could agree with that, Councillor Lawrence.
If you label 30% of the people who currently support Reform
that's not what
as
I said.
Far right, you are getting on very dangerous territory. So for me, from a Conservative perspective, we just need to make the case that the Conservatives are the only people that you can trust to turn this country around from the absolute disaster that Labour have created for us.
Councillor Paterson, my final question, the Gorton and Denton by-election. I mean, incumbent governments always tend to sort of suffer at by-elections. But in this case, you know, Labour were knocked into third. It's a safe, you know, has been a safe Labour seat for many years. I mean, do the Greens concern you?
I would find common ground with a lot of Green politicians and a lot of Green voters. I think that it's not surprising when parties on the left end up taking votes from each other. And I think that that was obviously a natural home for people who perhaps wished that the Labour government were being a bit bolder. And I count myself amongst those Labour Party supporters who wish the government were being a little bit bolder and communicating what they have achieved a whole lot better than they have so far.
Well, that's because you haven't achieved anything. There's not a lot to communicate.
Thank you both for your time, and I hope listeners have enjoyed it. Thank you both.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks.
So that sounded pretty fun, Rob. What did you make of your interview with the Medway councillors?
Well, I think I needed a bit of a lie down afterwards, I think, as some listeners may appreciate. It was a sparky debate. I mean, I think it was very interesting, some of the things that were said. I mean, particularly around, for example, the budget, and the fact that Andrew Lawrence, who's sort of very critical of Medway Council for taking on this exceptional financial support, the 60 million, the fact that he basically conceded that if the Conservatives were in charge and had won in 2023, that they would likely be making the same sort of choices, because he is very vehemently saying that you know, the EFS is lumping debt on future taxpayers. So the fact that he says, you know, actually they're kind of fiddling around the edges and it needs a big change is quite significant. I think also, I mean, School Streets, these two are on opposite sides and very strongly in favour of their own positions on this. So it was no surprise to me that they would sort of really get into it on that topic. I think Councillor Paterson suffers from, I mean, we hear all the time about the problems people have with potholes. It's something that comes up on social media and all this sort of thing, and it's a big problem for politicians because, as Councillor Paterson sort of said, he's got a limited budget, and you know, as much as he would like to fill in every pothole, he's not capable of doing it. But I don't think that's a message that kind of, it's a message I've heard Medway Labour try to make, the argument they've tried to make before, but I just don't think people are accepting it. You know, they might accept that the council doesn't have infinite money to fix this, but they still want it done. And I think it's a real difficulty for incumbent politicians to sort of make that case and get people to sort of say, you know, because when you hit a pothole when you're driving along and your car suddenly jolts because you've gone through a crevasse, you're not going to immediately be saying, oh, well, yes, but at least, you know, I understand why that's still there. You know, you're going to be like, blummin' heck, you know.
Yeah, well, that's why people pay their council taxes. They want these things fixed. I have to say, actually, I mean, I've done a fair amount of travelling around the county in the last few weeks, particularly on the road down to Thanet, and compared, Medway by far is the worst I've seen. Mm-hmm. It is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Medway residents would definitely agree with you. And, you know, I think it's certainly the case that some roads you drive down, you do think, goodness me, how on earth is this not being resurfaced? But, you know.
Well, we're the very place that we work. I mean, you know, I did a piece recently about the different types of potholes, and they all had different names that the RAC had given them. And, you know, they sort of illustrated this with pictures of all different shapes and sizes. You know, you take a stretch from the gate outside our office through to the first roundabout, about 200 yards up the road, and every single one on that list is on it, and others as well. Yeah, others have never been recognised before.
I travel pretty much exclusively by shoe leather and trains, but even I notice in the area of Medway where our office is the roads look basically like the surface of the moon if you pay too much attention to them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was speaking to a borough councillor in Maidstone last week, and he said he was talking about a local roundabout. He said it's got more craters than the moon's surface. You know?
But that's the thing. It's such a topic. You know, we've gone on a bit of a tangent here and talked about it. But you know, this is what people like to talk about, and I think politicians need to find a way to sort of
absolutely
deal with it.
The thing is that politicians don't like to talk about the issues that people talk about, but when they have to deal with them and actually have to fix these things, then it becomes a very awkward conversation. But it is actually the things that people matter. People care about illegal migration, emergency declarations? I don't think so.
No, but I think they probably care about, people care about the day-to-day issues that councils deal with, which is why councillors will put things on their leaflets that say stuff like, we're dealing with the potholes in the area, all that kind of thing. And yet still not many people vote, and very, very, you know, even fewer are involved in local politics in any consistent, active fashion. Whereas when it comes to things like immigration as like a symbolic national issue, that's the kind of thing that can turn people out. I think it's councillors focus on, rightly, on things which they can actually affect, like potholes. But the reason why much of the public don't vote in local elections is much, much deeper than not believing that the council's dealing with it.
I mean, but certainly, you know, when Ollie Leader and I were down in Margate, down at the very beginning of this election campaign. We spoke to a couple of old ladies, and then these two old ladies sort of said to us, well, you know, what are the local issues? She said the first thing she said was, funnily enough, immigration. Second thing was potholes, and the third thing was a lack of public toilets.
And maybe you need a triple issue party that can clean up the vote in that area then. Toilets, anti-potholes, anti-immigration. The hidden centre of British politics.
But having said that, there were plenty of other people who didn't mention immigration at all, but certainly mentioned the potholes and local buses and things like that, not stopping in certain places. So.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I wasn't surprised that these two got into it. I mean, anybody who's sort of casually watched any Medway Council meeting will have noticed that, you know, when they're in the same room, they do tend to gravitate to one another and spark off one another. So it wasn't necessarily a surprise.
Are they sort of reasonably chummy, sort of away from the chamber, or
well, actually, in the sort of lead when they came into the studio to sort of record the interview, we were sitting around doing a bit of sort of technical things before things started, and they immediately got into a debate. I mean, there was a sort of pretense of politeness to begin with, but then immediately it was into, well, you're a zealot on this, and you know, you hate cars, and you do.
Were
this.
You winding them up, Robert?
No, I have to say, I was trying to wind them down. In fact, because at one point they started arguing about school streets, and I asked them, please, you know, save this for the podcast. So there you go.
And they obliged. Yeah.
I think they had plenty in the tank. Well, that's everything for this week. Thank you, Simon, and thank you, Dan. And thank you also to Councillor Alex Paterson and Andrew Lawrence for joining us this week. Nikki White will be back again next week with her usual bite-size edition. So see you then next week.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.